Medical schools are striving to maintain a humanistic and humane perspective in their medical students, but the grind of medical school can eat away at that approach. UC Davis has developed its academic coaching program to address the hidden messages and socialization that exacerbate the problem. We're going to learn more about this initiative from the program director and UC Davis School of Medicine faculty member, Dr. Mikaela Godzic. Welcome to the 336th episode of Admission Straight Talk, except it's a podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result? You get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in!" Not only in, but in at the best program for you. I'd like to highlight for today's listener a wonderful resource for when you're invited to a medical school interview. Accepted's free download, The Ultimate Guide to Medical School Interview Success. In this guide, you'll learn how to prepare for interviews, including the difficult questions, how to make sure your body language matches your intent, and what is proper follow-up after your interview. Grab your complimentary copy at accepted.com/336download to enhance your chance of acceptance. I'm pleased to have on the show Dr. Mikaela Godzic, Assistant Clinical Professor in the Department of Family and Community Medicine at UC Davis School of Medicine. Dr. Godzic earned her MD at UCSF in 2007 and then did her residency and started her practice in Central California. In 2012, she moved to rural Shasta County in Northern California and later rural Washington State and enjoyed a full spectrum family medicine practice in both places. In 2017, she joined UC Davis School of Medicine. Her clinical interests include effective longitudinal relationships with patients in a variety of clinical contexts and physician well-being and professional fulfillment. No wonder that she is director of UC Davis's academic coaching program, which will be the focus of today's interview. Dr. Godzic, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Hi, Linda. Thank you so much for the invitation and for the honor of being here.
You're most welcome. Pleasure to have you. Let's start with a very, very basic question. What is the academic coaching program at UC Davis School of Medicine?
Thank you for asking. The program has been in existence for the last 2 years. It has developed into something that is quite robust now, where we have a total of 15 coaches who spend individualized time with students over the course of their medical school time. In these relationships, they have an opportunity to really mentor students, give them insight into how they're progressing through medical school, and help them achieve their goals through insight and thoughtfulness. There are different ways in which the mentors and the coaches have the opportunity to interact with the students. They actually interact with them in dedicated course time called doctoring, where they actually teach the medical students how to take histories, do physical exams, and have the opportunity to really shape the practice of doctoring. In addition to this, the coaches also go over evaluations with the students, give them insight into what specific attendings are saying when they say, you could work on this, and develop plans of action so that the students really can make good progress from an individualized standpoint.
Okay. And what prompted UC Davis to start this program, and why did it appeal to you?
So UC Davis is very good about gathering information from the students regarding what they think is working well in their training and what they think could be improved upon. And so at the end of the academic year 2017-2018, they did a survey of graduating students and tried to get a sense of where there was room for improvement. And one of the comments that came up time and time again was that the students felt a little bit disconnected from the faculty. They didn't have a sense that there was a faculty who knew them as an individual and had a sense of how they could develop in their practice of medicine as they became doctors. They felt that they had solid advising when it came to the logistics of being a medical student, figuring out when to apply for what, getting a chance to sign up for different courses, engaging in extracurriculars. They felt like they had good feedback about how they were doing in courses, but there was an absence of an individualized touch. And when you think about who UC Davis attracts and who we end up recruiting, and we're quite proud of who we end up recruiting, we're often dealing with students who don't have a lot of acculturation to the practice of medicine. These are students who might be the first in their family to go to graduate school, some first in their family to go to college. And so they don't have a lot of touchstones or reference points who can help them navigate the practice of academic medicine or understanding the expectations or certain aspects of professionalism. And so the new assistant dean of students, Dr. Sharad Jain, had come from an institution that had a model of coaching. And so there was a pilot program that was developed in 2018-2019 with just 5 coaches. And the response was overwhelmingly positive. And so the school invested and decided we want to expand it to a total of 15 this year. So I think the school has been very thoughtful about figuring out how to answer students' needs.
And what are the goals of the program? I mean, is it, can you be a little more specific about that? That's a little fuzzy to me.
Of course. I think that the goals of the program entail helping students develop a sense of themselves within the practice of medicine, developing an identity as a provider of clinical skills, having the students feel that they are part of medicine instead of being outsiders. It is helping them understand where their areas for growth are and how to achieve their goals. And finally, it's helping them develop lifelong habits of self-directed learning and how to acquire knowledge in a field that's constantly changing.
Oh, yeah.
What medicine looks like today has nothing to do with what it looked like 30 years ago. And so as students, this is the time when they can figure out, how do I continuously learn? How do I understand the newest developments, and how do I integrate them into my practice?
Okay. I think you actually kind of answered the next question I had. I was kind of wondering, why was it called academic coaching as opposed to personal development or professional development coaching?
Yeah. But, so, I mean, I think I did touch on it a little bit. I think, you know, academia is a very specific world. It's a little bit apart from anything else, and it's confusing. It's disorienting. When you start medical school, there are certain expectations that you don't get a lot of orientation to before you arrive there. And having someone who's in your corner, your coach, who can say, hey, the play that you made there, that didn't work out. Here's why. Let's talk about this. Let's do a replay. Let's break it down and say, huh, so you didn't do as well as you wanted to in this test. What was going on here? This was the expectation. And the distance between the expectation and your performance was such that there was, you know, a failure, or there was an incomplete level of success. So how do we do it differently next time? And a coach who has the time to identify what a specific learner's areas of strength are, often with these learners, they've had very rich experiences previously, and we can tap into that. We can say, hey, remember that time you overcame that hurdle when you were telling me about how you learned English when your family moved here at age 10? I know you've got it in you. This is what I think you can do here. Let's see if we can tap into those same skills when it comes to tackling the step one board exam. What's it going to take?
Right. And what kind of commitment is expected from the student in the program? I mean, do they meet weekly with their coach, monthly, as needed? How does that work?
So we're trying not to burden the students with too much extra work. They have more than enough on their plate already. The first year, in the first iteration of the coaching program in the 2018-2019 academic year, it was a set number of meetings. It was basically quarterly over the course of a year that were to be scheduled on the student's own time. And that was okay, but somewhat burdensome for students who had families or who had other obligations, who might be working on the side. So this year, what we've done is we've built in that constant contact for the preclinical years, the first and the second years, where the coaches actually are with the students on a weekly basis during these doctoring classes. So they're actually part of the instructing team of in these small group sessions where the students are learning how to take a history. We work with standardized patients. We do exams on each other. The coach is one of the small group leaders. So they have constant contact with the students and they have a chance to get to know them in that small cohort of about 8 students in those groups.
But I would assume they're not grading the student. The
exactly.
Coach, right?
They are not evaluating them in any sort of formal way that ends up on a grade. And I'm glad you brought that up because one of the things that we're very committed to is that the coaches are never in a position of evaluation because we want that relationship to be free of that burden.
Right. It's a coaching or mentoring relationship.
Exactly. And in addition to those contacts that we have on a weekly basis in those doctoring classes, we also have the coaches meet individually with the students every few months.
Okay. And what about once the students start their clinical rotations?
So
how does the relationship continue on?
So it changes where we've built in some coaching sessions every 2 months when they've finished their rotations and we review the evaluations that they've received on their rotations. Say someone was off doing a psychiatry rotation and then they get their results back in terms of how they did on the exam, how they did with them in the clinical setting, how they felt that their how the student performed, which is often it's a qualitative assessment, right? So it's an attending writing feedback about, oh, it seems like you were engaged with the material. And often it's hard for a student to grasp what this means and how it translates into the desired honors or just the pass that they end up getting at the end of a course. So the coach's job is really to sit down with the students and take the time to go through the evaluations and say, when they said this, it actually was code for you didn't do as much reading as they were hoping. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, we're interpreters of the clinical experience for students who are new to it, right? This is this whole level of interpretation and acculturation to a new environment that the students haven't experienced before. And interpreting that for them can be very valuable, and it helps them understand, okay, these are the expectations.
Right. And what if a student is on a rotation and having a difficult time?
Mm. That happens, unfortunately, more frequently than we hope. The coach is definitely a touchstone for that person, right? They often students have experiences where they wonder, is this normal? Is this appropriate? Do I, you know, I've had a trainees come up to me and say, this is what happened. Can you tell me if this is what was expected? And my response has been in the past, absolutely not. We need to, you know, do something about that.
Right.
And without having that viewpoint of a faculty member, they might have just internalized that experience and carried it around with them and said, oh, I guess this field isn't for me because this is what happens in this field. When unfortunately it was more about an individual's reaction or response that really should be brought to that individual's attention. And it's not about the learner themselves.
Right. Yeah. I can imagine that. I mean, one of the questions I frequently ask med students in my interview for the podcast is, was there ever a time, particularly on rotations, when you felt like medicine isn't for you, where you doubted your choice, either medical school or residency or whatever? They almost all say, yes, there was such a time. And then they, you know, for whatever reason, they got beyond it. Sometimes it's just the hours. Sometimes it's a particular incident. I sometimes talk about a time we had unfortunately a very sick child at one time, and he was in the hospital and he was supposed to go home. And there was a medical student on rotation, and he was a really nice guy and we got along great. And the attendings sent him in to tell me that our son wasn't going to be discharged that day. They wanted to keep him another day. Now, the guy was, again, a really nice guy. He happened to look very young. And it took all my self-control not to say, can you please send in a real doctor? I want to talk to him. Somehow I managed to control myself. And because I knew that what they were probably doing was making sure that he had to deliver something to a patient. In this case, I wasn't the patient. I was the parent of the patient that she wasn't going to want to hear. And she was going to argue with him because that's exactly what I did. But and I was pretty sure they were doing that on purpose. And it was probably a good experience for him. I was fairly reasonable parent, and I think I did persuade them ultimately that I could go, that we could go home safely. But you know, that's part of it, and I think they were probably right in sending him in so that he would have that experience.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear about your son, and thank you for being generous and being able to say this was a positive learning experience for someone when it must have been difficult for you. Definitely, there is an element of you know, we want medical students to have challenging experiences when they have oversight, so that, you know, when they don't have oversight and they're out in practice, it's not the first time that something has happened. Because suppose, you know, you had said something like, "I'd like you to leave," that medical student, which, you know, you might have been, and that's fine, and it happens all the time, that medical student would have had an opportunity, ideally, to process it with their attending supervising physician, or at least their senior resident, hopefully,
or in our UC Davis with
the academic coach. Exactly right. This is the opportunity. And then there's the other aspect of it. It's possible that no one was being thoughtful when they sent in a medical student to give you that information. And with some coaching or some support, that medical student might have been able to inform you in such a way that you were able to receive it and not have, you know, I think sometimes medical students in their clinical years are thrust into situations that they haven't had a lot of preparation for, just because
he had no preparation for this.
Right.
Absolutely not.
It's the pace of clinical medicine. Someone needs to tell the family that we're not going to discharge them. Okay, on to the next thing. And no one stops to think, oh my gosh, how is this news? Yeah, how is this news going to be delivered? Have we thought about whether or not he's done this before, et cetera, et cetera? And so we'll have students that come into our offices who need to talk about that, and they haven't found another place to talk about it, because on the team, of course, they're being evaluated, right? So their ability to just deal with it and tolerate the discomfort of things and smile through it as they're, you know, confused and disoriented because they've never done something, hopefully.
Or learn a better way.
Exactly. And so as coaches, we can sit down with them and hear it. First of all, give space for those stories to be told and say, it's okay, there is no shame in this. And then secondly, let's talk about what we could do differently next time, because there probably is a better way. And let's figure it out now before you're the attending.
Right, right. How has the coaching program been received by students and coaches?
I think the students definitely have felt, I mean, it's hard, of course, because it's a different cohort of students, so they don't know what there was before and what there is now. But certainly those who came in the time before coaching have found it beneficial. And I've definitely had fourth year med students say, well, you know, it was hard because we didn't have coaches. So, which is
must
a great
be music
fun.
To your ears.
Yeah, yes. I mean, it's really lovely to hear that it sounds like we're filling a need. So I think for the students, it has been really nice for them to have the opportunity to have someone who knows them and who knows their family. You know, we met them for the white coat ceremony for the first year medical students, and get a chance to really understand them in a kind of a 360 way. Who are you? Where have you come from? What are you hoping to do? And I think that that's tangible to students. So I have heard feedback that's quite positive. There's also been some data collected from the ones who are in the first year cohort who experienced it universally positively. So the response has been extremely helpful or very helpful, basically. No one has said that it was not helpful. So
well, that's great.
Yeah, it has been very
any better, like on the step exams, like the clinical.
So we haven't. I mean, there's so many variables that go into that. We are gathering
a small cohort, of course.
Yeah, So we'll see over the coming years whether or not there is an impact. The other place where we're thinking there may be a tangible impact is in the number of times that students need to be referred for professionalism issues. Right. Because, you know, that it happens every single year. It's very expected. It's very part of, you know, the routine that some students are brought to the attention of the professionalism team for behaviors that are less than desirable, and we have to do some remediation and talk about things. And often it's a question of orientation to that clinical environment or to the world of academia. Again, we're talking about some students who have very different backgrounds. If they've never worked before, they might not understand that not checking your email for a week can have significant consequences, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so hopefully through the contact with coaches, we can give them feedback in a timely way so that with their first hint of a problem or a challenge, we can say, hey, there's this thing that's been brought to my attention about certain attitudes or behaviors or communications, etc. Let's talk about that. Let me tell you about what people have noticed, and I want to hear what your experience of that is, and let's see if we can get some sort of common ground so that you're meeting expectations and you understand expectations going forward. So I think there's a big role for coaches to play in terms of helping students redress or address issues that come up before they become big problems.
For sure. Now, I think I first heard about the academic coaching program in an AMC article entitled Navigating the Hidden Curriculum in Medical School, which discussed the hidden messages and what to my mind was a socialization of students in medical school. What are some examples of that hidden curriculum, and how is the coaching program at UC Davis addressing the negative part of that hidden curriculum?
I think this dovetails nicely with what I was saying about professionalism. I think that, you know, the hidden curriculum really is a notion of everything that's taught outside the classroom through our behaviors, through what we do, how we treat patients, how we treat staff, how we interact with our world, what happens when we put on the white coat, what happens when we take it off. Those are things that are intangible, that are really hard to name, but that we model every single day. And so a very concrete and perhaps, you know, egregious example would be an attending provider who gives presentations on communication and then berates a nurse in front of a patient and the entire medical team, right? And so that incongruous behavior where, you know, you talk about things to do and then you demonstrate that really it doesn't matter, and that being done in front of learners is a hidden curriculum. That, again, I think that without a safe, trusting relationship, like what we hope that the coaches are building with students, it's very hard for the students to name when that happens. Mm-hmm. And so I think that what we're hoping to do with the academic coaches is that they are forming relationships with the students that allow the students to feel safe and to have a place where they can give voice to concerns that they have, or at least just express discomfort and say, gosh, you know, I was in an anatomy lab and I saw an instructor behave in a way that didn't feel respectful of the donated bodies that people have so generously given us. What do I do with this? And the coach who has created that safe relationship will allow that conversation to take place. And because we are faculty ourselves, we have the ability to bring that back to the School of Medicine and the Office of Medical Education and say, hey, let's look at whether or not there are patterns with certain instructors who interact with students, or, hey, this attending seems to consistently have a challenge when it comes to communicating feedback to students. How do we communicate that to the attending and let that person's chair know, the learning environment that's created is not the one that we want for our students? So we really think that the relationship between students and coaches can help shift that hidden curriculum and hopefully allow for change in the learning climate as we build a safe place where students know that they can give voice to concerns and that these will be taken seriously and brought back in ways that make change. So in some ways, we're a buffer and hopefully a safe vessel for those uncomfortable conversations.
I guess in that way, you'd almost be acting as intermediaries.
We're hopeful that way the students feel that they have a place where they can give information without there being significant consequences, because I think that's always the concern. What happens? You know, it's the whistleblower challenge. So they have to know that they're safe.
And what about, let's say it's not a case of faculty doing something not 100% or acting with consistency or acting in the way that you'd like them to model behavior. Let's say it's something where the faculty has been fine, but doctors, by their very nature, they are dealing with patients and their families under pressure in very difficult, tense, stressful situations, and sometimes patients die. That can be really hard on a medical student. Do the academic coaches come into play there?
Absolutely. So the opportunity that we create for these relationships are places where the challenges of medicine of saying, okay, when things go wrong, how do you get through that? How do you continue to do the work? How do you continue to show up even as you're sitting in a place of sadness, of disappointment, perhaps guilt about something that you thought you might have been part of? How do you move forward with that and continue to provide excellent care to everyone? One of the things that Dr. Sharad Jain, the assistant dean of students, was very thoughtful about when he chose the coaches is that he's chosen coaches who are relatively close in their developmental stage to the medical students. There are people who have been within 10 years of graduating, for the most part, with a few exceptions for some really amazing providers. But one of the lovely things about having coaches who recently were in training within the last 2-5 years is that they remember those moments of the first time this happened, the first time I was there when a patient died, the first time a patient yelled at me, the first time someone fired me. You know, those moments are very fresh in ways that it's hard for a very seasoned clinician to access, right? I think that, 20, 30 years into practice, some of those things might be fresh, but not quite as that time that was just 3 years ago. We hold these stories very tight in everything that we do. And I think that the legitimacy of the coaches as physicians who have been there before is carried in the sharing of those stories. So we really encourage the coaches to give voice to that. And so I'll often tell my stories when I'm talking with the students. In fact, with the MS1s, I recently talked about doing the MCAT several times because I wasn't happy with my score and just being very frank about that. In the week following that presentation that I gave, I had several people come up to me and say, that is so important that you said that. I didn't know that you could end up, as a faculty member after having had that happen. I think that,
I'm so glad you said that here now.
Of course. Oh my gosh. I mean, I think that we create this aura and this mythos around, what a faculty member is supposed to be. I mean, we've all had our very different journeys and we all have something to bring to the table. And if academia is for you, it really doesn't matter, how you got there. It's the passion you bring to it and the thoughtfulness. And so I think that the coaches really have the opportunity to share those hard stories about, yeah, there was a time when something bad happened, and it may have been part of me missing a diagnosis. And a coach to say that to a student gives a lot of permission, gives a lot of safety and trust and being vulnerable. I'm a big fan of Brené Brown, but being vulnerable with our students is what we want our coaches to do, so that they understand, hey, you can be someone who feels things and still be an excellent physician. This is part of the job. This is how you process it. You know, this is a place where you can talk it through.
Now, you alluded to your own personal experience as a pre-med with the MCAT, but how else has your personal experience as a med student or physician influenced your decision to get involved with the academic coaching program and your interest in general with physician well-being and professional fulfillment?
I think we all have that sense of, what would it be like if I did something over? And so this is a little bit of me getting an opportunity to fill in some blanks that I may or may not have had during my medical school education. I was very fortunate to meet up with very thoughtful people early on in my medical school experience, but it seemed to be almost fortuitous. It wasn't necessarily built into my experience. And these relationships have remained formative to me to this day. I'm still in contact with a few of these people. In fact, Dr. Jane, the assistant dean of students here at UC Davis, was an attending when I was a medical student at UCSF. And so these relationships remain important. And I know that there are some of my classmates in medical school who didn't have those fortuitous experiences. Depending on who you are, what you do, your personality or your communication style, these relationships may or may not happen. There's so many factors that go into that. So I think that what I wanted to do was to make sure that everyone had an opportunity to really feel connected to someone who was basically a near peer, someone who could help illuminate the corners of medicine that seem confusing, dark, and not sure if you really want to look into and question. And so for me, being part of this program is part of my work that feels effortless. It doesn't feel like work to me. It's fun. It's stimulating. I mean, these students are so amazing. They've done so many things. So having a chance to talk to them intimately is a privilege, really. And the other thing is that I consider coaching to be a form of almost primary care. It's almost like we're the family doc that gets to meet regularly with the patient, also known as the student, and do some preventive care, check in about, you know, how their development is, take some vitals, review some evaluations, make sure everything's okay, and then say anything else going on and sit there until something comes out. And if you have a good primary care doc, that is the place that you don't mind going, you know, as a patient, because you trust that person, you feel safe, and they know you, and they know your strengths, and they know where you have challenges, and they are the person who helps you get better. And so the coach as primary care provider is a model that I think is really lovely, because we also get to deal with 85% of the challenges that students come up with, but we also know when to refer them to specialists. So, you know, as coaches, we can say, oh, it sounds like maybe there's something going on with your ability to learn. Let's talk about referring you to a learning specialist. Wow. Or it sounds like your mood is really getting in the way of you being able to be successful. How about we think about referring you to the psychologist and thinking about how to improve? Or, ooh, it sounds like, you know, you have some significant food insecurity. Let's talk about what we can do with a financial aid agency to help you be as successful as possible.
Okay. Thank you for the wonderful answer. Now, as you deal with your students, both as a professor and as head of the academic coaching program, what do you think, med students when they arrive at medical school, or pre-meds before they get there, just don't get about medical school and the practice of medicine until they're in the thick of it, what would you really like them to know?
Oh, gosh, it's so hard to...
I don't know how much time you have.
No, I mean, there's so many different things. And, I mean, it's funny, I provide prenatal care and I deliver babies and I often have these conversations in the postpartum visits with my patients where I kind of look them in the eye and I'm like, so what was labor like? And they're like, it was, I can't even tell you. You told me it was going to be hard, but I didn't know. And you can't really tell people about what something's going to be like, something that's that intense, until it happens. And then people have to go through it. Because I can tell women what childbirth is going to be like. I use it's a marathon, all these, you know. But until you're in the thick of it, it's really hard to explain. But to go back to your question, I think it's hard to explain to a pre-med what it will be like to be at the bedside of someone who just learned that they have inoperable disease and they have to, their world shifts. Everything just moves for those patients, right? Everything just, the way the light looks is different. The way the room, you know, feels is different. And to be the provider who makes that happen and to sit with that is something really hard to explain. And so having that happen and then being the one who gets to be there to catch a baby and then being the one who tells someone that, you know, the drinking that they're doing is really making them very ill, having all of those experiences in the same day, kind of changes you as a person. And how you see other people and how the world looks. And that's something that I think as a pre-med, it's hard to understand how this profession changes you as a person. And some people chafe at it and that can lead to burnout. And some people embrace it and it can be the most wonderful job in the world. And it can be such a privilege to be part of this profession. But I think knowing that you will not be the same person on the other side of this is an important thing to go into medical school with that understanding that your approach to people in general and the world and life and experiences will be profoundly altered by medical school. And hopefully you're ready for that, or you've thought about what that might mean and prepared your loved ones and family for that. And hopefully I think that it's quite impressive to, on the other side with fourth year students. I work with fourth year students who teach first years, and the insight and the wisdom that they have to impart is just wonderful to behold. So I think it's again that you're learning a foreign language, you're coming into a different country that has different customs, and it changes you. And be ready for that and keep that kernel of yourself and know that it's going to look a little bit different on the other side.
It's interesting that you're saying. We work with a broad array of graduate specialties, and MBA programs like to talk about themselves, and they are, as being transformative experiences. They're very proud of that, actually. Mm-hmm. I don't remember any medical school saying this is going to be a transformative experience. It's possible, but in the business world, it's a constant theme. This is a transformative experience. And again, they're proud of it. I don't remember medical school saying it, but of course it's a transformative. You're dealing with life and death issues.
Yes.
It has to transform you.
Yes, thank you for saying that. It's true. I didn't have that awareness either, that there are different cultures that embrace it. But I think medicine, I don't know if it's a form of humility, if it's a form of we don't want to scare anyone. I don't know.
I think it's so focused on learning the medicine that, you know, it's kind of like they don't. Well, I think one of the reasons that the academic coaching program is new is that there has been such a focus just on the curriculum and not on the larger picture of the human being that is in medical school. And that's one of the reasons you have also the whole issue with burnout.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah. And I think that's
a very good point.
Interesting point. But And I think that in some ways, coaching goes back to the old school days of apprenticeship, right?
Yeah.
We would, you know, you'd have the experienced physician taking a younger one under their wing and telling them, this is how you live if you want to do this well. And so I think that, you know, sometimes we come full circle, but I think naming the fact that medicine is transformative could be helpful. I think that's an interesting insight that you bring. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome. Thank you for sharing your perspective. What would you have liked me to ask you?
I think, you know, you've asked some really thoughtful questions. I've heard people say, do you really think this makes a difference? If you had asked me that, I can only tell you by intuition, and of course I'm a little biased, but I think that solid relationships always make a difference.
Yeah.
I think this is about relationships. It's
and
not
communication.
So much about,
and yes. Communication.
Yes. It's not so much about saying, here is the recipe to be a successful physician. It is about learning how to process your experience in medicine, learning what type of doctor you want to be, thinking through how to approach things, and making plans for how to do things differently the next time. That is all very relationship driven, and it is the heart and soul of medicine, right? Because you can write some sort of elaborate protocol for a patient saying, you know, you're going to check your blood sugar 4 times a day. You're going to only count these carbs in your diet, and you're only going to eat between the hours of 8 and 3 p.m. And you can deliver this very elaborate plan that on paper works. If the patient doesn't understand what you're saying or doesn't care to do those things, or simply they can't because you haven't checked in about whether or not they have the means to do it, and they're not working 3 jobs to get by, and there's no way they can prick their finger 4 times a day. If you haven't had that communication with a patient, all the protocols in the world will never succeed. And so I think what we're trying to do here is really anchor students in the importance of clear communication, insight, working through how people interact with one another, and really giving them tools for them to be successful in their future careers as physicians through useful communication and navigating difficult experiences now before they're out into practice.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Thank you for your time. We're just about running out of time here. It's been delightful. I'm just so impressed with your approach, and it's a holistic approach. So once again, thank you. How can listeners learn more about UC Davis School of Medicine and its academic coaching program?
Thank you, Linda, for this opportunity. You've been really, really thoughtful about the questions that you've asked, and you've given me some insight, so I appreciate it. I'll also just mention that I come from a family medicine perspective. It's part of my job to have a holistic viewpoint. So people can learn more about the School of Medicine's academic program on the UC Davis website if they just go to the homepage and enter academic coaching into the search bar. Our webpage will come up.
Okay, great. Now we're going to link from the show notes at accepta.com/336 to the UC Davis Medical School and its academic coaching program, as well as to other resources of interest to pre-meds and medical students. One last reminder about one of those resources, our free download that will help you ace your medical school interview and get accepted, is The Ultimate Guide to Medical School Interview Success. Download your copy at accepta.com/336download to enhance your chances of starting med school when you apply. Listener, thank you too for tuning in to this, our 336th episode. If you found this show worthwhile, please make sure you don't miss any others. Subscribe through your favorite podcatcher. We have subscribe links in the show notes at accepta.com/336. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.